But what was interesting is that even before the pandemic hit, we had recognized that maybe opening up these brick and mortar studios wasn't the best route because of how expensive it was. And we saw this bigger opportunity in that big box, full service gyms and boutiques were kind of going head to head.
Hi there. Welcome to the Business Side of Fitness podcast. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Each week on the show, I leverage my 2 decades of experience in the fitness and wellness industry to have meaningful conversations with the movers and shakers behind some of the most well-known and innovative brands in our industry. This show is brought to you by Vanessa Severiano, LLC. To find out more about working with me, click the link in the show notes. And now the time has come to start the show. Everyone's got a story, and it's time to hear from this week's guest. Let's welcome to the show Eric Posner, co-founder and CEO of Swerve, which brings tech and teamwork to gyms and studios. Eric has a degree in psychology and economics from Harvard and was named by Industry Wired to be among the most influential people in the health and wellness industry. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited because, first of all, you have a really interesting background. I would love to know, how many of your past colleagues from school are in the fitness industry? That was kind of like an interesting pivot that you took. And so I'd love to just kind of start things off with you sharing a bit about your background and ultimately what led you to found Swerve.
Sure. Happy to share. So to answer your question, I'd say very few of my friends from college are in the fitness world, I think. So I played lacrosse at Harvard. And what's interesting is that, you know, although I studied psychology and economics, pretty much everybody on the Harvard lacrosse team went and worked in finance. And that was just where the network was and where everybody essentially got funneled and thought that that's what was going to make you happy and feel successful. And for me, so that's what I did. I landed a job at an investment bank working in a sales role and quickly recognized that that wasn't what my passion. But the way that the story goes is that I started taking clients to boutique fitness classes as a way to entertain and found that to be the ultimate way to build relationships. And especially as you're, you know, when you graduate college and you call somebody up who runs a hedge fund and you say, hey, let's go get a beer and talk business. Like, it didn't really work, but we connected with a lot of ex-athletes. And really what started off as taking one or two people to a Wednesday 6 a.m. spin class, it grew to a group of about 20 of us every single week. And it just was such an amazing time. We put everybody on an email chain and we had so much fun. There was so much banter and essentially it just felt like being on a team again. And that's something that we really missed because we didn't have team sports after college. And so that's where, so my co-founders and I, we were actually all doing the same thing, taking our clients to boutique fitness classes. And that's where we came up with the idea for Swerve, which was the world's first team-inspired indoor cycling studio. And essentially, we took the idea back to our clients who we were taking to these classes. We pitched them and they said, look, we get it. We've experienced this with you. We see the opportunity. But if you really want to do this, you need to quit your job and put up your own money. So we quit our jobs. We put up our life savings, literally everything we made in finance. They helped us raise the rest of the money to open up our first location in Flatiron in New York City. And that was back in 2013. So that's how Swerve 1.0 started.
Right. And it's been an evolution, right? So you started as a brick and mortar studio and now you're a B2B model. So can you walk us through that evolution?
I have so much to share about this. So feel free to cut me off if I'm going in a direction that is too wordy, but you know, so essentially, so we opened up that first location in Flatiron in 2013 and we were told, and you know, the vision was big. We wanted to have hundreds of studios. We wanted to be global, but what we were told that in order to get to that size and that scale, we needed to get to about 3 or 4 locations before a private equity group would actually be interested in you and you have enough proof points. And that's when you could raise some growth equity capital to scale. And really, that's what we were looking at, you know, SoulCycle and Flywheel. That's what they did successfully. And so we were following that path. And we got to 4 locations before the pandemic hit. So we really bootstrapped our way there. But then the pandemic happened and really changed our course. But what was interesting is that even before the pandemic hit, we had recognized that maybe opening up these brick and mortar studios wasn't the best route because of how expensive it was. And we saw this bigger opportunity in that big box, full service gyms and boutiques were kind of going head to head. And I think, and boutiques were booming and opening up, you know, all over the place and really stealing market share from the big box gym. And so that's where we thought, maybe there's a bigger opportunity here for partnership. And so we started talking to many of the large big box gym chains here in the US to see if we could partner and Swerve could power their cycling studios. So we started to think down that lane, and that became the vision to scale it in like an asset light way and do it via partnership. So that happened even before the pandemic. But then when COVID hit, we figured out a way to package it in an even more efficient and scalable way. So the pandemic hits. I won't bore you with this story, but essentially our immediate reaction, just like every other fitness business, you know, we got put into survival mode. So what we did is we rented out our bikes. We sent out an email to our members. We said, hey, would anybody actually be interested in renting these bikes? Otherwise, they're just going to be sitting here. We had over 2,000 people who wanted our bikes, and we only had about 160 of them. So within 2 days, we called up our laundry delivery service company to see if they could rent us their trucks. I took a truck. My co-founder, JH, took another truck, and we had delivered all of our bikes across the boroughs in New York and dropped some of those bikes off with our instructors. And they started streaming classes over Zoom to the renters. So that was essentially our way of like, okay, now we have some money coming in through the door as opposed to just nothing happening. But with that, our trainers had never taught in behind a camera before. And we were put in touch with this woman by the name of Marion Roman, who she was on Peloton's co-founding team. And we asked her, hey, like, would you be open to consulting for us and help our trainers? They've never taught in front of a camera before. She started doing some hours for us. And fast forward now, 2 years later, she's on full time as our chief content officer and helped us package the business completely differently. So what we did and what we recognized from this moment in time, and there's so much to talk about in terms of, you know, when the pandemic hit and the process to get to where we are now. But what I'd say is that it really gave us this moment to really reflect on what we learned from the past 7-8 years of operating our brick and mortar studios, and really figure out what worked, what would we do differently, and then where's the opportunity now? And instead of focusing on how do we get into the home, because everybody was stuck at home, we knew we were just too far behind. There were too many other companies that were doing it, have been doing it for years. We knew that the world was going to come back and gyms would reopen. So we focused on how can we think into the future and put together a solution that would meet the consumer where they're at. So the other part to that is consumers were stuck at home for a year plus staring at a screen, taking workout classes, right? So what that did is it just completely normalized a virtually led workout for them. So now, going to Swerve 2.0 and who we are and what we're doing, we came up with this idea to partner up with a gym that has a cycling studio, put up a large TV or large video wall at the front of that cycling studio, and live stream our classes into their studios. And we built out this technology that can pull the data off of any bikes that they already have. So we are completely equipment agnostic. These gyms don't have to buy new bikes. We can just pull the data off of it. And the way that we gamify the experience is such that your studio is your own team and you're competing against all the other studios on the platform. So took the idea to Crunch, who we had built an amazing relationship with over the years. We took it to their CEO and we said, hey, we believe that, you know, all these people, everybody has been taking these workout classes at home. We believe that if you still deliver this highly immersive and amazing instructor on a big screen, that people would prefer to do that as a group. because they're seeking community, they're seeking camaraderie. And we believe that we're the ones to tackle it in a way that will serve your members well. Fortunately, they gave us that opportunity and we launched in November of 2021 in two of their New York City locations. And here we are now, middle of August of 2022. And fortunately, the data that has come back has been truly exceptional and it's been going really well. So I'll stop there. I know I've said a lot.
So many questions coming from that. So obviously I have a sweet spot for Crunch since that's where I started my career 20 something years ago. But what do people care about team data and teamwork, or are they looking for individual recognition and individual outputs? Because this team concept, I love it as somebody that was never really good at sports, but always loved being a part of a team. I can definitely recognize that being a part of something bigger than yourself is really fun. But I'm just kind of curious as to like, do people get stuck in that, like, I want that individual recognition, I want to see my name on the leaderboard, or like, how does that work? Just explain that to us.
Yeah. So I mean, you mentioned it there. If you've been on, if you've played team sports at any point in your life, whether it was, you know, in middle school and high school and college, then I'm sure you can understand the power behind team. And so that's essentially what we're doing is bringing all those positive attributes of team sports into this experience, which include an added layer of accountability. And it includes more camaraderie. Like, you push harder because you don't want to let people down around you. And it also adds a layer of inclusivity. Right. So instead of just signing up for the 7 a.m. class at Crunch now, you know, you sign up for that 7 a.m. class and you're in an experience with everybody else around you. So that it creates this very icebreaker friendly environment that also harnesses more fun, and people are high fiving and hooting and hollering and you're in it together. And from a psychology perspective, this is what we learned over the past 8 years of operating our brick and mortar businesses, because it was a team-based concept before as well. We've just evolved that now, is that the psychology behind it is such that you need to motivate the individual first and make sure that they feel motivated, but then the team component is just that added layer that brings out more in them. So it's like individual first, team second, but the reason why you won't see an individual leaderboard up on our screens is that we want to make it very inclusive and we don't want to alienate anybody. And so that's where we feel that our experience is really doing a phenomenal job of casting a wide net to appeal to everybody. Even, you know, triathletes can come and take a class and love it, or people who are earlier on in their fitness journey can come and feel a part of it. And we sprinkle in the team-based competition in just the right, just enough so that it doesn't create any animosity. And that's, again, you know, the secret sauce behind the psychology of team that we've cracked over the past 8 years.
But are they getting their individual stats as well, or are they monitoring that themselves?
So they have a console where they can see their own stats. Up on the big screens, you could see how your studio is doing as a team. You only see how your team is doing there, but we also send an email to everybody who participates in a class with their individual stats after class. So that's where you can monitor it and you can track it.
Obviously, one of the biggest things that is happening right now is just all these layoffs with these fit tech companies. And every time I look at LinkedIn, I feel like somebody else is laying off 15 to 20% of their workforce, which is just like so sad to hear, you know. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, those conditions weren't going to last forever. And now, Eric, as you're looking to raise capital, what are some of the challenges that you're up against with raising this capital and people just pulling back?
So fortunately, we're in a very unique spot. I think that what's happening in our industry, you know, it's sad to see all these layoffs for sure. And I think the pandemic really delivered a very challenging moment in time for these companies, right? You got this massive spike in demand and you want to meet that demand. And then you spend a lot and then the demand starts to wane and you're stuck with heavy expenses and you need to tighten the belt. And so I don't think that the connected fitness industry as a whole is like on a massive decline. Like even I read, you know, Tonal, I think they had about, I think it was around 35% of their staff they laid off, but their sales are up. And I know that there are a lot of fitness technology companies that are doing well and the revenues are going up, but they're just spending too much. So I think there's a budgeting. I think budgeting is something that has been really hard to do over the past few years because of the pandemic. I think for Swerve in particular, while we are positioned quite well, as I referenced before, is that the pandemic spurred these labor shortages. So for gyms, they that have studios. So when the pandemic hit, what they did is they furloughed. Most gyms were mandated by government to be closed. So they had to furlough their employees, which included their instructors as well. And a lot of trainers or instructors, because they were out of work, had to leave the industry. So now that the world has opened back up, and another data point that is in our favor here is that I saw that gym memberships have officially surpassed 2019 numbers across the US. So the recovery has been quite strong in terms of gym memberships. But these gyms are now that have cycling studios in them, they're maybe doing one class per day. So with that, you're sitting on expensive real estate. If you're only doing one class per day and it's sitting empty the rest of the day, that's sunk cost. So that's where for Swerve to come in and say, hey, like we know that you're having trouble hiring talent and filling up your class schedule. So that's where we come in with a solution that has now proven to increase the profitability per square foot of their cycling studio and of their gym. So we are filling up their schedule with, you know, upwards of 10 live classes per day. So now there are more options for their members or for potential members. And the data that we're showing, so you know, one data point that we're very excited about is that we're proving to deliver between 40 to 50% of total group exercise bookings within our partnership gyms are coming from Swerve. And we are just one modality. We are just cycling. And so that compares to all other modalities such as strength, yoga, dance, all that. So, and what gyms know is that, and I'm sure you know this well, given your background, is that the reason why they have group exercise is because the members who take group exercise classes have higher lifetime values than members who don't. So there, and I think that is because of the community piece and the camaraderie and all that. They meet more people, keeps them engaged. There are so many reasons why. But so now that we can show that we're driving a significant chunk of those bookings is really positioning us well. And with that, we're going to a gym and we're saying, hey, like we know you have these labor issues. We're here to solve that and augment your experience. We can now prove that we're going to increase profitability per square foot. We do it in a way that makes it very simple from an operational perspective, right? We can turn those screens on, turn them off remotely. We allow it to that experience to run on autopilot, and they don't have to buy new bikes, right? We're tapping into existing equipment. So they're able to innovate with the equipment they already have. So going back to your question, like from an industry perspective, I understand that there are certainly some pressures on it. But I think for Swerve, we're solving a problem that gyms have in a really unique and innovative way. And we have the data to support that. And nobody's doing what we're doing right now. So we are fortunate to have the ability to be a first mover in this capacity. And that's where I think we're finding this early success.
And how are these partners receiving this information that you're sharing with them about the 40 to 50% of bookings are owned by Swerve, that this could help with, you know, solving some of the biggest problems right now, which is staffing and overhead, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, anybody that's hiring right now is just like, holy cow, what happened? But I guess maybe an objection that you probably commonly come across is like, if somebody is doing a virtual workout at home, how are we going to incentivize them to come into the gym? Is there a community aspect around Swerve that happens outside of the actual class itself? Is it that you're also then once they get in the door to take the Swerve class, they can use some of the other amenities? Like, are you increasing frequency in utilization or what is like the, how are you overcoming that objection?
So what I'd say is that this was part of like the initial ideation for this experience? How do we get somebody out of their home and into the gym to want to come and experience this virtual class? And that's where it being live is so critical. So, and we have two-way communication. So essentially, when you walk into any of our partner gyms, such as New York Sports Club or Crunch or the YMCA, or, you know, which we have a few more that we're about to announce that we're very excited about. I can't say just yet, although they may be announced by the time this podcast releases. So when you get in, every bike has a QR code on it. So you snap a picture of the QR code and it then prompts you to enter your name and email. So it auto-populates. So you're going to, so now we know that, let's say you took class in Miami at the Miami location. So we now know that Vanessa just signed in to Bike 2 at Miami. So it automatically sends that information to us. And our trainers on the live stream can call you out. They can see how you're performing. They can motivate you. But also, going back to the team-based concept, they are calling out the studios to help really create this gamified and fun and immersive experience that you, the rider, feels seen. And I think that is so important in making it engaging enough. So if it were just an on-demand class that we were offering, I think it would fall. And so that's where the gamification, the two-way communication, and the immersion is really what's drawing people in to come and experience it. Which, and then with that, going back to this team-based concept of harnessing community, that's why boutique fitness was booming in the first place, is because it was able to harness community in such a powerful way. And we're doing that within our actual experience. Most other, even boutique fitness modalities and concepts out there, they built community either before class or after class, but not actually within it in what's happening. So I think that's another thing that we're really leaning on. And so for gym partners, when we share this and we share that data, they are very excited about it because they want their members to meet. They want them to connect because that's going to keep them coming back more. And so the early data that we have, so not only are we showing that the significant amount of bookings, but we're showing a month over month retention rate that's hovering around 88%. So a rider that comes 1 month, do they come back in the next 30 days? That number is very high. And so it's still early, and we're, you know, because it's not our data, it's their data. You know, we're working to piece together as much as we possibly can to show how we're increasing frequency. But so far, just from the bookings and retention data, that's been getting gym partners very excited.
One of the challenges that I've seen with entrepreneurs is it's kind of like you fall into one of two camps, right? You're a visionary or you're an operator. So I'd love to hear how you and your co-founders split up your day-to-day operations, responsibilities, and also decision-making.
Awesome. And before I dive into that, I do want to share, because I think this is also very important about what we're building and how we're packaging this for gyms, is that we are pure B2B, right? So we will never do anything that competes with our gym partners. Like, our number one goal is to help them drive their gym membership and their member retention. So with that, you know, when gym partners hear that, I think that makes them very excited. So all these tools and that we're building out, and the way that we support them, is all about providing our learnings of being in their seat before. And so I think that's, and this is, you know, your question made me think about this as being an operator. Our roles are, you know, when operating those four boutique studios previously, our business model was such that we had to fight for every single visit. Right. It was a pay, you know, you're buying a package or you're locking into a membership, but every single class, you know, we had to offer an experience so that they come back. It's different than the gym model, right? So that's how we've been wired. And then also with the post-class email and these other retention tools, we are now able to take that to a gym partner and say, hey, we've been in your shoes before. We've operated this. But here's how much we've learned and from operating a boutique. So we want to hand you that on a platter so that you now have it at your gym to combine the best of both worlds. So yeah, I think that's just something that is really important to note and how we stand out as a company. But now to answer your question more directly, from I think what this moment in time did is it, as I mentioned, you know, we call it the great reflection for us, where we just, you know, our corporate team and my co-founder and Marion and some of our top trainers, we all got together and, you know, we were meeting 3 times a week during the pandemic on Zoom, just like talking about what we should be building, where's the biggest opportunity, how has the industry changed? And so, and it very naturally fell into like, who is responsible for what? So in particular, for me, I handle our investor relations, and I also run with sales and our partnership growth. JH, previously before with Swerve 1.0, he was very ops and tech focused. So that is his lane still. Marion has filled a crucial role for us because we essentially had to build out a live broadcasting network, and we had never done that before. Right. Like you walk into our Flatiron location now, our live streaming headquarters, it's like you're walking into CNN, right? We have these live classes happening and our production team is, they're operating a live broadcasting network, which if you would have said to us, hey, you need to go ahead and build this, we probably would have figured it out because we're wired that way, but it would have taken a lot longer and it would have been way more expensive. But Marion coming on board and having the know-how because of her previous role at Peloton, having the right people to come on board and help us build it in an efficient manner was such a game changer. And she also helped us hire the best of the best trainers and who have really filled their roles as just ensuring that, because we can keep a small team, we don't have to have a massive, cast of trainers, that we can really take care of them and invest in them and spend our time to ensure that we're delivering on the best of the best with each class. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay.
Eric, how has your life as an entrepreneur changed from owning a brick and mortar studio business to now owning a fit tech company?
It's changed for the good. And it removed, look, there are challenges with any type of business that you're building, but going back to, we've been able to solve for a lot of the challenges that we had previously. For instance, like having to find real estate to open up new locations. One, that's very challenging in and of itself. Having to build them out was very expensive. Having to hire 10 trainers per location and ensure that they're delivering on the best of the best experience. Because as you scale, you need to hire more people and you need to add more classes to your schedule. So now our life has been made easier from a perspective in that the team is way smaller. We're able to just invest in, again, just a smaller group of people and focus on just on building this foundation. And as we power more locations and sign on more gyms, we don't have to add on significant costs, right? It's just about turning on a new studio and then providing that partner with support. So it's really about delivering on, of course, delivering on a great experience, but then supporting that partner to make sure that they're not only getting the word out, but that if there's any troubleshooting that comes up, but our lives have been made a lot easier. And we consider ourselves, we are now second time founders, right? It almost feels like this is our second business, but yet we've been able to take all of our key learnings from Swerve 1.0 into 2.0 to really help propel us forward.
That was a very politically correct answer. What about managing staff? What about managing members' expectations, the renewals, all of that stuff? I mean, are you so happy to be done with that and not dealing with direct to consumer, or do you miss it?
What I'd say, we really miss we've just met so many like amazing people over the years, right? And our members and just like all of those connections. And I think now that we are inside of gyms, like we're able to go and visit those gyms and we're able to take classes and connect with those people. But ultimately, the reason why we started Swerve in the first place was not because of the dollar. We did it because we loved bringing people together and harnessing community and connecting one another and doing it in a way that's like positive for your life. And so it was, and that's what ultimately why we chose this path of uncertainty, over being in a corporate job that paid really well, but we were unhappy. Right. So I think that's ultimately what gets us up in the morning. And so I think there is that element now of with this model where we're not as directly tied to the consumer because we're not meeting them every day. They're not coming in and getting their shoes and towel and water. And so that is something that we miss. But yeah, I'd say that. But overall, you know, we are now that we are able to go and visit these gyms and meet our riders, like it's taken a good amount of the challenging pieces off of our plate.
Who's the ideal partner for Swerve?
The ideal partner. So gyms that have cycling studios, we feel that this is a concept that is really appealing to the masses. So one thing that I'll also share about the experience is that the way that we come up with the team scores, it's a combination of average power and average rhythm. So our trainers will say when they come onto the stream, you know, if you're feeling strong today, you know, the way that you're going to earn more points for your team is if you're pushing hard. Or, you know, if you want to just ride to the beat, keep the rhythm throughout class and you can earn an equal amount of points for your team. So that, I think that that's something that I think is actually really important to the experience because it helps cast that wide net. So you don't have to be super strong to get a high score. You can just have rhythm. So there's this accessibility piece that we're really tapping into, and accessibility and inclusivity. So from that perspective, like an ideal partner, like it really is, we have so many potential partners here because the experience appeals to a wide demographic of rider. So it's hard to give you a specific answer, but what I can say is that so far the gyms, you know, that we have on board, the Crunches, the New York Sports Club, the YMCAs have been amazing partners for us. And it's really just the beginning.
Eric, why is now the right time to raise capital, and where are you planning on utilizing that capital?
So we essentially have, in addition to those partners that I mentioned, we have a few more gym chains that we've just signed with. We have a couple of hundred gyms, like locations in total, in LOIs, in letter of intent. So essentially we prove out within a first location that it works, then they are planning to roll out into the rest of their clubs. So we are feeling very bullish on this experience already and all this positive data that's coming out. So that's why we've recently decided to commence a capital raise to just add some fuel to the fire, to really build out the team. There are some elements to the technology that we'll be enhancing. What we're so pumped about is that, you know, what we're delivering on is really just our MVP product. We've just hit the tip of the iceberg in terms of what the vision is for the product. And yet the data has been so strong. But so to invest in that, and then also to really build out our support team to ensure that we are providing our partners with as much support as possible to maximize the success of the program, that's where the money will be going towards.
What's the tech look like when you're attaching it to the bike, and what's the installation and investment?
So the beauty of it is that nothing has to be attached to the bike. So the bikes, the key is that a bike needs to have a console on it. If a bike has a console on it, our technology can pull the data off of it. So, and that is, it doesn't need to be hardwired. We put our tech in the room. It's literally on the wall. It can pull the data off it either via Bluetooth or Ant Plus technology, because that's what, if a bike has a console on it, it uses either one of the two. So that's where, so for gym chains that have bikes that don't have consoles, certainly they can buy consoles to put on the bikes, and then we can pull the data off of it. But the way that the upfront cost, if you have bikes with consoles, it's just putting up the screen and hardwiring the Wi-Fi. So the installation is about a 2-day process. And we have a 3-week onboarding process from after you've installed, then we go through, you know, we're handing them marketing materials and just guiding them through best practices for how they can get the word out and how they can just educate their staff and speak to the experience and get people to come and try it.
When you reflect back on Swerve in the last 10 years and all the evolution that you've gone through and innovation, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned from running this business?
I was joking about this recently, is that, you know, the name Swerve, right, the way that we came up with it was that we were swerving off of our corporate path that we thought was going to make us happy and make us successful. And then we pursued something that we love and something that we were more passionate about, which was fitness and health and wellness. And so But what we've learned is that over the years, you know, in building a business, is that it takes lots of pivoting and lots of swerving in order to get to where you want to go. But I think if your vision is super clear, then you will get there eventually, right? If you have a clear vision and you have conviction and you don't give up, you will get there eventually, but it's going to take a lot of pivoting and it's going to take a lot of swerving. And, you know, it's funny, even one of my mentors, when we first started our business, said to me, Eric, don't expect success until the 10-year mark. And I reflect on that now. It's like, it's interesting because I do believe that that's how long it takes now to really get you to the place where you've learned enough about your market, about what you're doing. And if you kind of stick it out that long, then you can ultimately find success in building a big business.
Well, kudos to you, Eric, and your team, because most businesses never make it past the first year, let alone to the 10-year mark. So obviously you're doing something right. If somebody wants to connect with you or learn more about Swerve, how can they do that?
First and foremost, I'd say our website, swervefitness.com. You can check out our Instagram. It's at Swerve Fitness. For me personally, feel free to reach out. My email is just Eric, E-R-I-C, at swervefitness.com. Happy to talk.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If it brought you value, please subscribe, review, and share the Business Side of Fitness podcast. If you'd like to learn more about working with me, please click the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.